From Hologram Radio, this is Covered, a conversation about books with the people who write them. I'm your host, Harry Marks, and today's guest is the graphic designer behind the font P22 Marcel, which is based on a series of letters written by a man in a forced labor camp during World War II to his family back in France. She's here today to talk about her book, Marcel's Letters, which details her search for the elusive man behind the correspondence. Please welcome Carolyn Porter to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's a delight to be here.
It's wonderful having you. I must say, I picked up this book on a whim. It was faced out at a Barnes & Noble, and I saw the beautiful font on the cover, the P22 Marcel, and I saw the word letters. And I have a fascination with correspondence because it's not something that people do a lot these days
in
the age of email and social media. So I picked it up, and I've always been kind of a font slash typography slash calligraphy nerd, and I was reading the book, and I was expecting an interesting story, but it's kind of hard to make fonts exciting for someone who's not into them, and I'm reading the book, and I am just enthralled with the detective work and the just obsession and, force of will to track down who wrote these letters and everything. So I'd love it if you could give me an idea of how you came into the possession of these letters and what made you decide to get them translated in the first place.
So just some background, I'm a graphic designer. I work with type all the time, every day, all day long, designing clients' pieces. But I also have, like you, this love of old handwriting. And years ago, I first learned that another designer, whose name is Brian Wilson, made a font based on old handwriting. And it was just this eureka moment for me that it combined technology and graphic design and handwriting and all these things that I love. And I decided right then and there I was going to design a handwriting font someday. Didn't know how it was done. I had studied typography for sure, but the type design software was something I was completely unfamiliar with. But I knew I was going to do it someday. And it was only ever intended to be a fun side project. So for years, I kept an eye out for the perfect reference sample for my font. I looked at handwriting of old relatives. I looked at handwriting in museums and on eBay and in antique stores. I knew I needed to find a reference sample that was really complete, that being had lowercase A to Z and uppercase A to Z and numbers. And a lot of the reference samples that I found were beautiful, but very limited, and so they didn't work for the font. I was in an antique store in Stillwater, Minnesota, which is just about 12 miles away from my home, and I was in this tiny little store and I saw these letters. And as I stood in the store, I knew these beautiful handwritten letters were going to be the basis for my font. And at that point, I didn't initially know anything about Marcel or his story or where he was. Upon looking at the letters closer, I could see there was a postcard that had been mailed from Berlin to a little village in France. But I don't speak French, so I had no idea what was in the letters, but initially it didn't matter. There were these complete set of samples that I needed, that being it had all the characters that I needed for a font, and it was just beautiful. And an A in French looks like an A in English, so initially it didn't matter what was in the letters.
What compelled you to get them translated at all? Because I have to imagine most graphic designers, if they had come across something like this, they would have said, oh, wow, that's really pretty handwriting, and I'm going to turn it into a font. But you went a step further. You said, and what I found really interesting was you had done this at a time in the book, you say, where money was tight, and so frivolous spending like this, at the time, that's probably, I assume, what you might have been thinking. I don't really have the money to do this, but I need to do this. What was that feeling?
So I had been working on the font for 9 years, evenings and weekends, because it was never a full-time job. It was just, as I could make time for this silly side project. And I was to a point in the project where I was just really frustrated. The original letters had been pressed flat inside a book cover inside the closet of my home office for years. I hadn't looked at the original letters for many, many years. And I pulled the original letters out because I was really struggling with this one particular letter. I was so frustrated and pulled the original letters out. And I had forgotten how beautiful they were, how they were almost pieces of art. So imagine I had been designing individual letters in black and white as black and white outlines, but I hadn't been looking at the letters in color. So I had forgotten that the ink was denim blue and shades of gray, and that the paper was yellow, and that the paper edges were feathered, and that there were stripes painted in the background. So it was that I knew his writing intimately, right? I knew the shape of each A and each E and each B, but I realized I didn't know anything about him. I didn't really know what he was saying in the letter. So it was initially a curiosity. It was just a whim. And it cost $60 to have the first letter translated, which I did have a little heartburn about because, you know, that's a trip to the grocery store. It was a challenge to spend $60 on something I didn't need to do. But I also thought, I need to find out who Marcel is, and I need to understand more about what was in his letters.
Would you mind reading a little bit from the book?
I would love to. So once I had two letters translated, I just became curious about learning more because it seemed like everything I learned it was just such a tiny little puzzle piece into this big story. And I just wanted to learn more. And I'm on the computer all day, every day with client work. And I'm pretty good at researching things and finding things. But I had spent weeks trying to find out who he was and why he was writing from Berlin, because he was a Frenchman. And I couldn't figure it out, and it didn't make sense because it didn't sound like he was a French military prisoner of war. It didn't sound like he was a businessman. And I knew starting in 1942, French Jews had been started to be deported to Germany, but it didn't sound like that was the case either. And so I was just really confused. So after weeks of looking for him, I finally found the puzzle piece that explained why he was there. So that's what I'll read for you. So thanks for letting me explain the backstory to this little section. A few nights later, I stumbled over a three-letter acronym that changed everything, S-T-O. As soon as I understood what those letters represented, I knew that was why Marcel had been in Berlin. Within Germany, approximately 20 million working-age men had been transferred to military units on the Eastern or the Western fronts. Initially, German women filled jobs left behind in factories, mines, and farms. But when women could not fill the need for manual labor, Hitler empowered his Commissioner General for Manpower, Fritz Sauckel, to acquire new workers, quote, at whatever cost. Some of the first workers were brought by cattle car from Ukraine to work on German farms. Other workers were swept up in raids or abducted, then deported en masse. Some were as young as 10 years old. By the end of the war, more than 5 million workers would be brought into Germany. By the Germans' own admission, fewer than 200,000 were there voluntarily. In mid-1942, 2 years after Germany invaded France, Sauckel demanded 250,000 French workers. To fill the quota, the Vichy government announced the Relève, a campaign that encouraged French citizens to volunteer for the German war effort. Radio broadcasts promised favorable wages, comfortable living conditions, and assured prospective workers that the Germans respected everybody, quote, be he a manual or intellectual worker. As extra incentive, the Germans agreed to release one French prisoner of war for every three volunteers. One Relève propaganda poster showed a hand thrusting a key skyward with a headline that proclaimed, "You have the keys to the camp. You release prisoners by working in Germany." Another included an illustration of a burly, broad-shouldered man in overalls, a gear in the Eiffel Tower in the background. It promised, "You will be the ambassador of French quality." Another showed German and French workers shaking hands while standing on a curved earth illustration of Europe. "Come to us," it read. "You will be well received. You will make money." Small text at the bottom promised that the Germans would take care of you after your departure. Another poster featured an illustration of a canary-haired German with an enormous smile and a sledgehammer balanced on one shoulder. German workers invite you to join them, the text proclaimed. The German looked so carefree, so downright giddy, that if the sledgehammer had been a golf club, it would have been a perfect advertisement for a country club. Many of the first French volunteers were from the fringes of society, petty criminals who chose Germany over prison, the idle who had been rounded up at cinemas, cafes, and racetracks, foreigners living in France, and women who were pregnant by German soldiers or who had no other way to support their children. Reports even swirled of the Vichy government deporting children on public assistance. When the number of volunteers filled less than half the quota, the Vichy government needed a different strategy. The pretense of voluntary recruitment was abandoned, and Service du Travail Obligatoire, STO, was implemented. A chill shot through me as I realized what that meant. Working for the Germans was no longer optional.
Today's episode is brought to you by Nacht Sound Engineering. Nacht helps you record, edit, and produce great podcasts, streamlining the process so you can deliver high-quality shows to your audience. Whether you just need to trim the ums and you knows, or you're looking to set up the perfect recording rig, Nacht has it all covered. Speaking of, Nacht makes every episode of this podcast sound terrific. Consider this more than just an advertisement, consider it an endorsement. So if you're looking to bring your podcast to the next level, contact Nacht Sound Engineering today at nachtsound.com. That's nachtsound.com. Nacht, more than a stack of tracks.
This wasn't just about learning what the letter said or what happened to Marcel. You learned that what we were taught regarding the intimate details of World War II were either wrong or vastly underestimated, as evidenced by the section you just read. I had no idea that the Germans had forced the French and other neighboring people to build tanks for them or to work in their camps. And not only that, but that they were paid and they were, I mean, towards the end, they were lied to about going on leave, but they were provided certain things that people in similar situations in the past had never been afforded. And I was just wondering how did these details affect your search and your creation of the font?
Well, at one point during the search just consumed all my time. And so as hard as it was, I put the work on the font aside because I had to know what happened to Marcel. I had to know if he lived or not. And I just got sucked into this research because, as you said, this was just a part of World War II history I had never heard of. It had never come up when I had studied World War II. And I think the war itself is just so complicated that in many ways it has to be simplified to tell the story of the war. And so stories like this, of this relatively small segment of society, it's just not talked about. And plus it's terribly complicated because workers like Marcel, they didn't have a choice, but yet they were working for the Germans. And even within France, workers like that were looked at with very conflicting viewpoints. So workers, as you said, they did get paid, and they did get paid based on nationality. Workers like Marcel were paid a higher rate. They were seen as more productive. Mm-hmm. Than other workers from other countries. Even that being said, they had deductions made for food and lodging. He had to rent his clothes. So there were significant deductions taken out of pay, and currency was manipulated in a way that workers thought they might be sending money home. However, the money that they were sending home ultimately turned out to not be all that valuable because of how the currency was being manipulated. So workers were just, you know, he had it better than other workers for sure, but he was still in a labor camp.
I was even surprised to find out that they were allowed to mail correspondence. I would think in that situation, you work for the Germans or you're killed, and that's it. You don't get any special treatment. You don't get to write letters home. You don't get, you barely get enough food to survive. You don't get leave. You don't get to go anywhere except your barracks and the plant. And yet I learn in reading the book that it's not like he had autonomy over anything, but he had more freedom than I would have expected someone in a labor camp to have.
Right. And as a Frenchman, for example, he had a little bit of money, so he was able to buy food on the black market. Mm-hmm. So he was able to supplement the rations that he got in camp. He had the right as a civilian worker to unlimited correspondence. Although what I learned about that is because there was a risk he might hide a message under a stamp. Anytime he mailed a letter, he had to invest time to go to a post office, stand in line, pay for a stamp, and then the postal clerk had to affix the stamp on the card so right. that he wouldn't hide any message underneath the stamp. So he did have autonomy in that he did talk about leaving the camp at times, that he got a pass to go outside of the camp. However, keep in mind, he also could have been wearing clothes that marked him as a prisoner.
Right.
I read one account from another worker where workers were not allowed to walk on the sidewalk. They were not allowed to sully the sidewalk. So, yeah, he was able to leave the camp at times. In one of his letters, he talked about seeing the streets of Berlin and even looking in stores. However, he couldn't buy anything in the stores because he didn't have the right kind of coupons. But it was pretty interesting that in one of the letters he described what he saw in Berlin.
The Nazis were notorious for being meticulous record keepers, and you ran into quite a bit of struggle in tracking down Marcel and what happened to him. And it wasn't until you had reached out to a friend of a friend who specializes in genealogy research to find what happened to him. And I think from what I remember, they only found him because of certain relatives' birth or death certificates or something like that. It wasn't even Nazi records they had found. What did you ever find out why it was so hard to find Marcel? Because I would have thought if the Nazis had seen him as property, they would have tracked said property.
Right. And there are records of him entering the labor camp, him leaving the labor camp and then re-entering the labor camp. The second record does not show a final date of exit from the camp. But at the end of the war, they were less meticulous about record keeping. And personal records in France are private for 100 years after a person's birth. I think in the U.S. it's 75 years. So that played into just the timing of what records were ultimately available.
Mm-hmm. I want to jump back to the font a little bit because there is a person behind these letters and there is a person behind these fonts. And fonts, even when they're trying to exhibit human qualities, they're still very inhuman things. They're machine created things. And right. I would love to know, how do you make something very human like handwriting? How do you turn it into a font without it becoming almost like a parody of itself?
Ooh, that is a really, really great question. If you look at the font based on Marcel's writing and compare it side by side to Marcel's actual writing, it is slightly more mechanical because it has to be, in that in original handwriting, there is variation in size between every single letter, and some of that just won't work when you need any letter of the alphabet to fit with every other letter of the alphabet in a very seamless way.
Right.
So the font did ultimately become much more streamlined and mechanical. Some of it is some of the limitations of the font software. And some of it was just as I was testing and refining the font, you know, you do that by testing actual words and looking at all these different possible letter combinations and revising and refining to ensure that all of those combinations work.
And so it took you 10 years to create the font. Were you pleased with the final outcome, or do you still go back and think, I could tinker with this a little more?
I think font design is like writing in that way, and that you could always tinker with it. You could always go back and revise and refine something, but at some point, creative projects have to live in the world, and you have to let them go. Mm-hmm. After the font was released, I didn't look at it for probably about 6 months, just because I couldn't. I couldn't look at it objectively, and I also didn't want to look at it because I didn't want to look at it and regret not tweaking something or other. But after about 6 months, I forget what I was working on, but I used the font and I thought, gosh, that actually is a pretty lovely font. And that surprised me because I had been working on it for so many years. But it was nice to have that reaction after not looking at it for 6 months.
It is a very beautiful font. And I want to love script fonts or cursive fonts, but a lot of them just look very, like you said, very mechanical, very uniform. There's no personality behind it. But I really did appreciate how some letters have, you know, the ink is a little heavier on certain strokes, or you can see where it might bleed into the paper a little more. You pulled those little artifacts and those little pieces of Marcel into it, and I thought that really helped elevate the quality of the font.
Oh, thank you. Good. Love that. One of the things that I have been surprised about hearing from readers is just their new appreciation of fonts and typography. And I've heard so many people say, I've never once thought about the person behind a font before, either that, or they just see type in a new way as they're just driving around in their car or looking at magazines or whatever, that they have this new appreciation for typography. And I really love hearing that.
Yeah, there was a documentary several years ago about Helvetica.
Sure.
And it was interesting, but you really had to be a font nerd to really appreciate it. And this, I thought, was a lot more accessible. And I guess it's because I'm certain it's because of the human being behind it. But you say you worked on the font for 10 years, and your search for Marcel was over a year, right? It was 2 years?
It was 10 months from the time that I had the first letter translated to when I learned his fate. Mm-hmm. But then a whole slew of things happened after that. I continue to learn new things. A couple of weeks ago, I learned something new about Marcel. So that has been 5 years of continuing to learn more about him.
But it speaks to your, and it's for lack of a better word, but it's the only one I can come up with, but there is an obsession. And I guess you have to be a little obsessive when you take on something like this. But you have this passage on page 113, and there's a great word, beholden. And you say, the word to describe what I had been feeling hit me, beholden. Somewhere along the way, the search had changed from a curiosity to an irrevocable responsibility. It was as if not stopping until I found out his fate would prove someone cared what happened to him. It would prove the fragment of life captured in his letters mattered. Even if I did not know anything else about Marcel, I knew this. He existed. He mattered. I really want to know what it was about, after getting that first letter translated, that made you feel beholden to find out what had happened to him.
Ooh, another great question. I think that sense of obligation came about more as I was searching for information on his fate than the letters themselves. I was just searching everything that I could, every place I could think of to find information. And it seemed like he had been erased from history, as unfortunately too many people in World War II were. And whether it's an obsession or just being stubborn, it just seemed like the more I got the sense that he had been erased by history, the more I was just determined not to let that happen, which is hard to explain because he's not family. And some people struggle to understand that. But I think it was just because I knew his handwriting so intimately, and his letters, the letters that he wrote to his wife and his daughters, were so personal that I just felt like I knew what was in his heart, and I had to find out what happened to him. I could not let it go.
And throughout the book, you have this hope that he made it out okay. And there's a section in on page 149, you're talking about 9/11, and you were listening to a radio interview, and there's a mother who says, "Hope is the thing that destroys you," I heard one mother say in a radio interview weeks later. She begged for relief from the agonizing hope her daughter would walk through the front door one more time. She prayed hope would release its suffocating grip so she could grieve. And we're told all the time, you have to have hope, you have to have faith that things will work out for the better. But in this, she says, "I don't want the hope. The hope is what's killing me." And it just makes things worse not knowing what actually happened to her. Do you believe, after everything that happened with your search for Marcel, that if you had had the answers up front, would that have been better than the adventure you have under your belt now?
Ooh, that's a big question. I think if I had learned his fate immediately, there are 100 other things about him that I would have never learned. So ultimately, not getting the answer right away did make the search richer, and it upped the stakes of my emotional involvement. Mm-hmm. So for that, looking back, I am grateful, though at the time it was terribly frustrating. Mm-hmm. You know, I just think I wouldn't have been as emotional as I was about learning his fate if I had learned it right away. Mm-hmm. I think if I'd learned it right away, it just would have kind of been a matter-of-fact kind of answer.
You're a podcaster and blogger. You need an analytics and hosting platform that provides you with the right tools to make your job easier, so you can get back to doing what you do best, creating stuff. FeedPress is a delightfully intuitive RSS analytics and podcast hosting platform with accurate analytics for RSS feeds and email newsletters. Bloggers and podcasters can tap into RSS subscriber, geolocation, podcast download, and link tracking metrics, which come standard on all plans. In a matter of minutes, podcasters can create a feed and publish it to iTunes. Add your show notes, artwork, and drag and drop an MP3 into the editor to go live. Every podcast plan comes with 400 megabytes of file storage that's unmetered. This means you won't have to worry about running out of storage for long episodes or getting dinged for a sudden spike in download traffic when your podcast becomes an overnight success. FeedPress offers an automatic feed burner migration tool so you can make that transition with ease. Your feeds and subscriber data will be moved into your FeedPress account. And if you're currently hosting a podcast elsewhere, they can help you migrate your feeds and media files over so that your listeners don't notice you've changed anything. Support is responsive and available 7 days a week via email. Sign up today and try FeedPress on a 14-day commitment-free trial. Use promo code COVERED during checkout to get 10% off your first year.
Do you think, knowing up front his fate, you would have worked as hard on the font to finish it, or that you would have finished it at all?
That is, I don't know that I can answer. Depending on one of many possible outcomes, it, for a while it was looking like I maybe couldn't finish the font, which was a hard thing to face because I had been working on it for so many years.
Right.
But ultimately, learning what I did, I felt a greater responsibility for the font itself to represent him and represent all of these complex emotions in this incredibly important but overlooked part of history. I just felt a responsibility to make the font beautiful and finished and let it be part of his legacy.
Was that the ultimate goal for the font, was to have this lasting memory that would probably outlive the letters as well? Or was there another motive behind creating the font in the first place?
Oh, up front, as I said, it was just going to be a silly little side project. I mean, I had no idea it was going to last as long as it did, or just become part of my life in the way that it has. Mm-hmm. It only ever was just going to be a short little fun little project.
When did you know that this story would make for a memoir like this?
Let me think about how to answer that based on not wanting to reveal too much.
I mean, did someone say to you, oh, wow, this is really interesting, you should turn this into a book? Or was there some other sort of serendipitous thing that happened that made you say, or did it, maybe an agent came to you or someone came to you and said, we'd love to turn this into a book?
Let me think about that for a second.
Okay.
So after a year of looking for answers, I did ultimately establish contact with members of Marcel's family in France. Based on what I learned from them, the story continued to evolve and get bigger. And at that point, it felt like the universe was in play in a way I didn't really understand or couldn't predict and had no control over. And at that point, it felt like this story is bigger than me. It is bigger than the font. It is bigger than Marcel. And it needs to be shared with, it just needs to be shared with the world. It took more than a year after that point to secure all of the approvals that I needed to be able to share the story. But I would have to say it was in 2012, after establishing contact with the family, that I just knew the story had to be shared.
What was the process like for getting the book off the ground? Did you have a proposal and you sought an agent, or had you just started writing the book and when you were done with it, you had started querying?
I only know one other person who has written a book, so I didn't have a lot of friends or people that I knew to go to be able to get guidance about the process. So I started writing a book proposal. I think it was about 70 pages long, including the first chapter. I sent that out to some agents to try to get representation. Nobody jumped on the project. And so I realized I needed help to figure out what I was doing wrong, because I obviously was doing something wrong and I had no idea what it was. So I ended up partnering with a book development editor, which was an amazing, I'm still in touch with her, and it's been an amazing 3-year journey now working with her. Her name is Jill Swenson. And she, as a book development editor, was both able to give me feedback on the arc of the manuscript, but also help me refine the book proposal, refine the sample chapters, help me with all of the technical things that you need as part of a book proposal for the comparable titles and whatnot. And then she helped me secure an agent who then reached out to publishers. So it's a multi-step process.
Wow. And you had never written anything like this before, right?
I had done some writing for clients, but I never marketed myself as a writer. And this is the first real thing I've ever had published. During the writing process, I did take several classes at the Loft Literary Center in Minneapolis, which was an incredible help. They just have an incredible both in-person selection of class options as well as online class options as well. Because I hadn't written before, I needed to brush up on some grammar skills for sure, but also just additional help and practice on making this a work of literature that people would want to read versus just a recap of what happened.
Did you, as you were writing, did you work with either the development editor or beta readers on making sure you were headed in the right direction?
The development editor, for sure. I did send out a few sample chapters, but what I learned pretty quickly is that without knowing the full arc of the story, the beta readers would provide feedback without knowing the whole picture, which was sometimes a challenge to work with, without explaining to them how feedback would ultimately be addressed in different ways elsewhere in the book.
And that's the thing that's so compelling about it, is that where the reader is learning along with you as you're conducting the search for Marcel's fate. I love how you would sprinkle in these little sentences like, but I wouldn't learn that until much later. And so I'm sitting there going, ah, damn, I got to keep reading. I need to know what happens. I got to keep going. That kind of writing, you learn by doing. And it's interesting to learn that you hadn't written that kind of, that you really hadn't written before beyond client work. Right. Because the book comes off as having been written by someone who has done this before.
Oh, wow. Thank you. You know, to address one of the things that you were talking about is I'm not a historian. I'm not a trained historian. Mm-hmm. And I know historians are very proprietary about their area of expertise. So I had to be very careful about taking readers along on this journey without presenting myself as having any artificial credential for the research that I did. So I decided to do that by taking readers along on the journey that I went on to discover all of this.
Right. It never comes off as you're a World War II expert or a handwriting expert. It's always, here's this research I did, and here's what it told me. And I appreciated that because, like I said, it felt like we were all learning along with you.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Throughout the book, you talk about how you tell Marcel's story and the story of the font and everything, but you tell it in bits and pieces to people. You never give everything away. What was it like the first time you told your story to everyone in its entirety?
That too plays into the question that you asked earlier about when did I know that this would be a book? When I started telling people the story, and as I was doing the research and even working on the font, not a lot of people even knew about it. So when I started talking about it, people started crying, and it was overwhelming for me to see that response because I had been feeling that response, you know, for a long time at that point, but it was validation to see how strongly the story resonated with people. I'm sorry, I forgot the second part of the question.
I was curious for you, how did it feel for you the first time you had told everybody or had told the story in its entirety to someone or a group of people? What was it like to finally give everything away in one shot instead of the bits and pieces here and there as you had been doing?
I mean, I feel like I'm introducing them to Marcel and this incredible love story that I had been privy to for a really long time. So it's kind of like introducing a friend to other friends and somebody who you've known for a really long time, just introducing them to people that are really dear to you.
And you say you're still learning things about Marcel even all these years later.
I am, yeah, for sure.
Do you still keep in touch with the family?
I do. Yep, I do. Facebook messages were going back and forth just a couple days ago.
Oh, wow. That's terrific. You know, the letters leave me with so many questions, like how was he able to maintain such optimism and hopefulness throughout this whole ordeal? Because anyone in that situation, I would imagine, would be despondent, depressed, you know, either suicidal or just, you know, numb to everything.
And that's one thing that I think is just remarkable about Marcel and his letters is that he is always hopeful and confident. And there was only one passage where he talked about if I come home. Every other letter talks about when I come home. And whether he believed that or not, I believe he said that for the benefit of his wife and his three young daughters. And it was just remarkable that he maintained dignity and humanity and hope inside a labor camp. It's just remarkable. It still gives me chills when I think about how hopeful he was.
And I have to wonder, maybe he did that. He said he would be coming home over and over again, because if he didn't say it out loud, if he didn't write it down to his family, and he accepted the alternative that that's what would have happened, he would have resigned himself to a different fate.
Right, right. Absolutely. Or if he knew that these letters might be the only thing that his family had afterward, what would you write down if you knew any letter might be your last?
Right. And the progression of the, or you could even say the de-evolution of the prose, because the letters, as you get further along in the timeline, towards the end of the series of the letters, I think there's 12, 13, 14 in all.
17. Yep.
17. So towards the end of the 17 letters, the sentences get shorter. He gets more frantic, frenetic, almost like the war is doing something to him mentally, and he's just getting it all down stream of consciousness as much as he possibly can.
And even visually, the letters change from the beginning of 1943, where his handwriting is neater and bigger, to the letters that were written later in 1944, the paper is even degraded and his handwriting isn't as lovely. And interestingly, I think if I had only ever seen the letters from 1944, I would not have picked them up and made a font out of them, because his handwriting in those letters is not beautiful. So the paper, his writing, every part of the condition of living just was in a degraded state at that point.
Yeah. Have you considered doing other fonts based on handwriting, or
was that the only one? I do have another font in the works, actually, but it is low in the priority list, and I have absolutely no time frame as far as when it's going to be done.
How has the response to the book been? From both Marcel's family, from friends in your type group?
I'm kind of overwhelmed, actually. I get quite a few emails from readers saying saying one of a few things. One, they have always loved typography, but have always been afraid to admit it out loud, but now they feel like they can, that they're a closeted font geek, but now they can, you know, be loud and proud about loving typography. Or even people whose own families have been impacted by World War II, feeling very touched by the fact that I needed to make sure that Marcel was not forgotten, and that they had that same kind of feeling about their own family members, or even that they feel like they know that they're part of Marcel's family now, that they're just very honored to have met him through this book. Mm-hmm. Or even people who love handwriting and lament the fact that handwriting is going away.
Yeah, there was a book, I'd say last year, 2 years ago, it came out, about how handwriting is unnecessary and, you know, kids should be focused on learning to type and, you know, get rid of the handwriting education. And I belong to several groups on Facebook that center around pens and pencils and typewriters and all different stationery items. And there is a collective collective sigh of exhaustion when that book comes up in conversation.
Is that Ann Trubeck's book?
I think so, yeah. Especially with a guy who runs a podcast about pens, because I believe they had tried to get her on to talk about it, but she never came on. Even me personally, I have taken to writing letters to people. I have a Smith Corona typewriter I love, and I've been typing out letters, and I love getting mail that isn't a bill or spam or something awful.
Yep.
I enjoy getting it, and I would think other people would enjoy getting a handwritten letter or a typed letter in the mail. I think there's something more personal about it. Has this whole process changed your view on correspondence? Do you find yourself writing more letters?
I, like you, have always appreciated getting and sending out handwritten letters. So I've always tried to do that. I continue to try to do that. It's hard sometimes because it takes longer. But I am aware of how special handwritten correspondence is.
Do you do any talks on Marcel and the letters?
Oh, for sure. I have a talk tomorrow. That one is a bit more focused on the history of French forced labor. Mm. Next weekend, I'll be at the Ways Goose Conference at the Hamilton Woodtype Museum in Two Rivers, Wisconsin. It's a weekend-long conference. That's an amazing place. So I'll be there talking about it. So yeah, I actually have some events lined up through next April to talk about Marcel and his letters and the font and the weaving together the two stories.
Before, you said that when you were writing the book, you didn't want to come off as an expert in something you weren't an expert in. Are you considered an expert on forced labor of World War II after having done all this?
I wouldn't call myself an expert because I still feel like there's so much to learn. However, I've also heard from people who say that they know a lot about World War II that they've never heard of this before. So
wow.
Maybe I'm a reluctant expert in a very specific part of World War II history.
Interesting. Having gone through the process of writing and publishing a book, do you have any plans to do it again?
I don't have anything in the works. If there is a story that resonates with me like this one did and just, you know, becomes a part of me and takes up residence inside of me until it is told, sure, I would be open for that. But I don't have anything in the works right now.
Carolyn, thank you so much for coming on today. This is wonderful.
This has been a delight.
Where can people find you online?
My website is carolyn-porter.com. Right on the homepage is a photo of Marcel if they want to see his photo.
Are you on the social medias at all?
Oh, the social medias. Yes, I'm on Twitter. What is my Twitter handle? At Porterfolio.
All right. And we will put links to your handles and everything in the show notes. This has been Covered with special guest Carolyn Porter. Links to Marcel's letters and all other books discussed will be available in our show notes and on our website at hologramradio.org/covered. I'd like to thank our Patreon patrons, Brad Dowdy, Vaughn Johnson, Chris Jones, Tim Wassum, Stuart Lennon, Kyle Wallace, Alex Knight, and Aaron Mankey. If you're able to give a dollar or two an episode to help fund more great interviews like this one today, please consider supporting Covered at patreon.com/covered. And if you fancy other Hologram Radio shows and would like to drop a few dollars their way, you can support the network as a whole at patreon.com/hologramradio. You can follow me on Twitter at HCMarks and the show at Covered_FM. Thank you to TJ Cosgrove for our beautiful logo and Lorenzo Gudemi for all the hard work he puts into making this show sound fantastic. And as always, thank you again to Feed Press and Knock Sound Engineering for their support of this show. And remember, don't judge a book till it's covered.